Hey, White Sox fans, Brett Ballantini here, lucky enough to host once again a Southside Sox postgame podcast. This is number 14. Now, of course, this is a West Coast trip, so, you know, you're probably listening to us or watching us or checking this out in the morning. Hey, good morning. It's good times in the White Sox world. I'm lucky enough to be joined on her West Coast White Sox odyssey, and a very successful one it is, Elizabeth Gonzalez. Thanks for joining me again and talking with us about Oakland, about this hot White Sox team.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
All right. We have some great adventures in Oakland without even knowing what you think about the ballpark. We'll get to that in the second half after the break. But Elizabeth, your road trip with the White Sox coincided with them, let's see, getting the bats out of cold freeze. The offense is back. Pitching remains consistent and seems to be getting better and better. I mean, really, whole road trip, and certainly what we've seen in Oakland in two out of three games, enormous offense, and even the outburst in game two. What have you seen from this team?
I mean, I feel like we're putting on a hitting clinic at this point. Every game feels like this is going to sound bad, but I was almost kind of like, who is this team? And this game is kind of boring. It was just running up the score. So I was hoping for today to be some sort of happy medium between game one and game two, to no avail. So we'll take the win, however it comes.
Yeah, the extremes. You'll take the, I mean, given all of what you envisioned when you first figured out this trip and thought, okay, what am I going to see in Oakland? Oakland's bad. Am I going to be crushed by the fact that they're not going to be able to beat the A's? So yeah, if you have to choose an extreme, this is definitely the extreme to have chosen. Elvis Andrus at the top of the order, you know, he's doing it defensively, but offense seems to really be a spark plug to the point where now we're having debates about, you know, what are you doing to Anderson's healthy and all that. But at any rate, I mean, this has really been the guy who has got the team, you know, rolling. It seems like now game after game, he's picked the ideal time to have one of the hottest runs of his career, and certainly his hottest run of 2022.
Yeah. Yeah, I feel like every game we're either recapping his highlights or talking about him or standing and cheering for him, because he's always doing something offensively, whether it's, you know, hitting a home run or giving other guys tips. I saw that in a post-game analysis of giving tendencies of different pitchers since he is so familiar with the club. So I think that's definitely helped because it feels like our offense is just so hot and everyone is hitting better and better.
Yeah, and before we even scoot over to the pitching, one thing that you've been really good about in terms of sort of tweeting ideas out and sharing with Southside Sox staff as well, some of the observations you've been seeing getting to the games, I think generally early observing the team, focusing on the team, not a ton of attention, even though I'm sure there's a little bit of a contingent even in Oakland. But, you know, the things you've been picking up, the interaction with the team, you know, just generally spirit, but even maybe some of those, you know, one-on-one type of things. What have you seen from the team in terms of how they're working together? You know, I guess mostly in warming up and preparing for a game, but what have you been seeing?
Yeah. So I think even the White Sox tweeted out a little clip video saying like they were silly yesterday, and that was very evident. So in BP, it was Latin and Hispanic Heritage Night yesterday at the ballpark. So music was blaring. There was mariachi. There was loud music just playing, all Latin based artists. And I mean, you could tell the guys were having fun. They were dancing, goofing around, and it's just light and airy. So I think that makes it easier for them to just kind of do what they do best. And now we're kind of seeing the team that we expected to see earlier on in the season. I'll take it now rather than early on, because look at the Yankees. So I feel like everything's just clicking on all cylinders. And I think that's evident in terms of, you know, the energy that they're seeing. Everyone's up at the dugout. I mean, granted, there's no wall or anything here in Oakland. You're just basically on the field, so you have to be paying attention anyways. But I think that's evident. And I think we're getting to see clips of that from what I've seen on social media, at home as well for the viewers. So I think that's been really great, but it's definitely apparent here. A lot of the Oakland fans are a little bit bitter about Elvis's performance because apparently he wasn't showing that level of hustle when he was here, or at least so I'm told. But we love him, so we'll take it.
Yeah, I mean, can't feel too bad when the guy gets cut basically so a big contract kicker next year doesn't play in for 2023. I guess that doesn't exactly excuse effort, but yeah, Oakland fans, they might be a little bitter, especially, I mean, come on, he's lighting up his former team. I mean, this isn't like 2 years later, you know, some delayed revenge tour. This is like, you know, literally they got him, you know, a matter of just weeks ago. And you're right about the stuff in the dugout. I mean, of course, it's easier when the team is winning. Of course, it's easy when the team's winning. The team's winning in blowouts to just sort of get a little party atmosphere going. But, man, this is something that I'm not sure when we saw. I think we probably saw it first week of the season because the White Sox got out gangbusters and had some big games, even with that heartbreaking opening day last-second loss. What is that? That's April for crying out loud. I mean, it has been months since we've seen this kind of excitement, enthusiasm, vibe on the team. It certainly helps when you're like, eliminating your run differential in like a matter of a game. You know, that certainly helps, you know, the party atmosphere, but it does seem like there might be a little bit of burden lifted on these guys. They've been, they were anointed the champions of the division, before probably the lockout was even decided. And we had labor peace, and got out easy. And who knows, maybe week in, they think, wow, okay. Yeah. This might really be this easy. We're 6-2, you know, we're beating some pretty good teams.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, stuff sort of rushed up on them. So, you can imagine there being just a sense of relief. Although again, you know, there's nothing wrapped up yet, and we'll get to that in a second, but let's switch over to the pitching, real quick here. Lance Lynn coming back. Still being a little bit banged up, getting out of the gate for his, I guess you'd call it second half. He's had more than just half a season, but getting the first starts under belt, not terribly effectively. Had some sort of bad luck, I think, particularly with defense stuff that he ends up being pretty vocal about when the defense doesn't back him. Yeah. But not quite in the Dallas Keuchel way. Anyway, this is a guy who's now, he's nails at this point. I mean, he's really at this, you know, he's really almost, you know, pushing Cease, and then Cease is pushing Cueto. And I mean, we've got at least a big three here with this team that could really be scary if the White Sox get into the playoffs. And nobody's saying it. White Sox have been an easy mark all year, but White Sox get there, they're not a team that you're going to want to face. You know, that's a bold thing to say, so I'll shut that right down. But just from the pitching staff alone, from this core three, core four of starters, this is a team that's not going to be like, they're not going to be patching together, shouldn't be patching together with scotch tape when it comes to the rotation, which really is maybe the biggest factor when it comes to postseason. What do you see? You've seen start after start now. You're going to see, I think, Cueto for maybe the second time tomorrow. But, yep. I mean, you've seen them all. This team's beginning to dawn on the mound.
Yeah, I think that the consistency and finding the command is there. I mean, with Lance specifically, he's kind of now at that spot where he would have been earlier on in the season had he not been injured. So I think, you know, having the experience that he has, he's known that he's just kind of had to struggle through it. And we're seeing like vintage Lance Lynn, where he's dropping F-bombs and getting cocky on the mound. We saw it a little bit from Joe Kelly last night. It was kind of funny. So I like seeing that spirit in our pitchers, especially when they can keep it under control. And same with like Kopech. Like, I think I've seen a ton of growth in Kopech, with just the maturity level. Like, early on, he was getting frustrated and taking it out on things in the dugout. And he's kind of, you know, tempered down and realized you can't do that. You're a starting pitcher and we need you. And I've referenced this before, but still that level of support of all the starters going out, watching the starter of that game warm up, maybe picking up little tendencies of each other to help each other up. And I think that that's making a difference. So I don't know. I mean, I don't know. We don't know what's going on in the clubhouse, but I feel like those little nuances are making a world of difference in terms of execution. And we're seeing pitchers go longer and longer in the games too, which is great, because while we do have the bullpen, I mean, Bummer's fresh back. Yeah. Crochet has been here with the team going back and forth. So maybe he's giving insights, things of that nature. But I think it's nice to see Jose Ruiz is had a good outing again. So I think that's building up his confidence, getting in those spots, especially with the run support, where we can give time to the bullpen pitchers without having that pressure of, hey, you're coming in and the bases are loaded, because that's been kind of the story for some of them. And that's a difficult spot to be in. And then to not have success, it's got to be difficult for their confidence level. So I think that all of that is playing into what we're seeing. And hopefully we will be able to continue the run support for Johnny Cueto tomorrow.
And it's a relief that as the hitting finally picks up, again, let's not write it in ink yet, because it is still just a little burst, and it's been against Oakland, but I mean, you know, let's say this offense is woken up and it's a bit back, that then the pitching hasn't taken a step back. It could easily be like, okay, well, you know, you somehow let up, or you're just due for some slumping, and that hasn't happened. When this team is firing in both aspects there and playing even, let's say, average defense, they're going to win this division. Let's face it. Let's address something that we got to address, because it's looming. Of course, news broke. White Sox finally broke their silence about Tony La Russa. It's like he didn't exist for a week, and now they're back saying, hey, you know, he is going to be – I mean, of course, they weren't going to be able to avoid it. He was going to be part of this thing going on in Oakland, so you can't exactly pretend he's not alive. So, okay, they're forced to comment, and so the comment was, yes, he is going to be traveling back to Chicago with the team. He has not been cleared to manage yet. He's going to be part of the ceremony, so let's not get crazy whispers going on. But really – not overstating anything, not promising anything. Who knows what's going on in the background? The early reports, maybe a few days ago, or even looking toward this trip, was talk of Tony being ready to come back and stuff. But that was stuff that was all sort of coming from reporters who have Tony's ear, and so on. So there wasn't anything coming from the White Sox, and there still really isn't. But I mean, it seems inevitable. Tony's back. Tony's back maybe as soon as a Tuesday night in Chicago. Give me an idea what you think the dynamic is going to be. Whether or not the White Sox can continue the Cairo momentum with Tony back at the helm, because that is a — I don't think that's a make-believe issue. That is a real issue. Yep. Do you think this team has got the momentum now to push through that?
So that'll be interesting to see, right? It's obviously going to be awkward. Miguel Cairo is still part of the staff. So how they handle that is going to be really telling. I think that the dynamic, based on what we're hearing from players, has obviously changed within the clubhouse. I think it was Liam that said today, like, they're yelling at each other and making fun of each other, and that works and keeps it light and airy. And if they do something dumb, like, they're going to get called out. And I think especially with the age of a lot of our younger players, with Romy and Vaughn and Sheets, I think that's probably a helpful environment for them to kind of be able to feel like, oh crap, I made a mistake and now I'm going to get crap for it, and we're just going to move on. So it'll be interesting to see how that plays into it. If it like prohibits any of the success, who's to say? I think that they're going to have another type of player meeting or big meeting with Miguel and Tony and everyone, obviously behind closed doors. So what will we learn from that? Who knows? But if they continue to play the way that they're playing, and the bats are still there, the pitching's still there, I mean, they can still continue to go on and win. And I don't think it'll be that big of an issue. I think the bigger issue before, when Tony was here, is that a lot of accountability that was shown on Tony is maybe not necessarily justifiably so all on him. A lot of the players weren't performing. Right. We've had lots of conversations at length about that. So we'll see. But I'm curious to see the environment and kind of the vibe, and to watch some of the players tomorrow when he's here, and see what that's like.
And not to dismiss the Twins, they seem to be faltering. Cleveland, as we're recording, Elizabeth, seemed very much in control of their game Saturday night. So it seems like they're going to remain a game and a half ahead of the White Sox. I mean, this is a team that has undergone some serious adversity. I'm not sure about their diversity. That's a whole different podcast, but their adversity with their starting pitching in particular, and their offense sort of went completely flat, seems to be a little bit back now. Kansas City will do that for any team, but this is a team that seems for real. Again, not to dismiss Minnesota, because it is still a three-team race, but the Cleveland does have the upper hand. They have the tiebreaker, or they will likely have the tiebreaker unless the White Sox just destroy them in the remaining games. This is a team that's for real. The White Sox are going to have to go out and win it. How do you think at this point, with a month left, these two teams size up against one another? Cleveland does have a couple games to make up on the Sox, so they're going to be a little bit busier, maybe a little bit more fatigued. It's an early look, but this is a formidable foe. There's certainly — both of these teams aren't going to roll over to the White Sox just because they got hot on a West Coast trip.
Yeah. No, I feel confident, and I was one of those people that hadn't thrown in the towel on the White Sox before. But if they continue to play this way, regardless of who you put in front of them, our pitching is better than the last time we faced the Guardians. Our hitting is like out of this world better. So I think that if you put our talent against their talent, plus our veterans and their experience, I think that we come out on top. But it's a matter of what version of the White Sox show up when we play the Guardians. So if they continue to keep this mentality, the fun, the light, the airiness, where there's not too much pressure on any one player, I think that's the environment that they all thrive in. And then they are able to pick each other up and see the results like we've seen the last couple of days.
In case you haven't figured it out, and wouldn't blame you if you hadn't, Elizabeth Gonzalez, Southside Sox writer, is in the Bay Area. She has been on this West Coast trip. And, as far as I know, she just went there because of unlimited devotion to the Southside Sox. It had nothing to do with a trip that had been planned for months and months. But we're going to talk a little bit more specifically about Oakland, the ballpark, and maybe even more so some of the fan experiences she's had in Oakland now with three games under her belt with one still to go. We're going to take a quick break, hang with us, and learn a little bit about the Oakland experience in just a sec. White Sox fans, we're back. It is postgame podcast number 14. I'm lucky enough to be joined on site by Elizabeth Gonzalez. We talked in Seattle, which made a real big impression of you ballpark wise, and even to some degree, some of the fans you got to meet and sort of sit with and hang with. It seems like at least the fan experience has stepped up considerably with your Oakland experience. But let's talk first just about the ballpark itself. Of course, it's a multi-purpose stadium. Football ballpark, a lot of seats. It's just a weird experience. Maybe not in the 70s when it was in heavy use and fans were actually cheering for championships. But certainly these days, it's a different sort of experience. How does it measure up for you? And what are your initial thoughts about the Oakland Coliseum experience?
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely an outlier just by virtue of the age and the magnitude of the ballpark itself. Like, it is massive. It's named correctly. It feels big. And when you're walking around, it does take a while to get from point A to point B. One thing initially, aside from the size, that I noticed is they do allow tailgating here. So that's something that we obviously resonates to us on the south side. So that is that. In terms of like the upkeep and stuff of the park, you can tell that it's aged. It's likely not going to be here much longer, let alone are the A's going to be here? Probably not. So having a lot of conversations with fans about that. They do have a couple of cool areas. One in the outfield that's like revamped. It's called the Treehouse. I was there yesterday. And they had, they do like happy hour specials. There's pool tables. There's an open area. You can watch the batting practice from there. It is in part of it is in the stadium, so you can easily access the bleachers and things of that nature if you want to watch BP. But that area has clearly gotten some love, so that was cool. One of the other areas that I thought was cool is if you want to splurge for seats, there are equivalent of scout seats are called the diamond level. And one thing that is unique about that is when you go down, you actually share the same hallway as the visiting team. So you are there is just a little divider up. There's signs that say, don't interact with the players or what have you. And for the most part, they do a pretty good job of not letting you in that hallway when there is a player walking out. But it is a cool access point to the players. There's a gate when you're out by the seats where you can get autographs and things of that nature. When the players are done with the game or before, just depending on who it is. So I got all the tips and tricks from some of the employees that work there. So that was cool. I did get to high five Luis Robert in the hallway. And then we took our rally. And that was during game two. So that portion was cool. No different than any of the other stadiums. Everyone here is super, super friendly. Really takes pride in the historic aspect of their club. And I did get the opportunity to meet their PA announcer, Amelia. We got to take a picture today and I chatted with her a little bit longer. First female announcer for the A's. So she's great. She was giving me all of these little inside tips and tricks, some things to look forward to tomorrow in terms of the planning of the retirement of one of their jerseys. which is why Tony is going to be there. The player that's getting retired specifically wanted Tony to be there because he was monumental in his career. So had that to look forward to. But the fans that are here want to be there. They care about baseball. And so that's nice. A little bit different than some of the other ballparks that I've been to that have more of like a theatrical entertainment mm-hmm. aspect to it. You're there to watch baseball. If you're here to watch an A's game. So I did like that about it. Again, super nostalgic. They have these drummers in the outfield. Their hashtag is drum together. So that's kind of cool. But it's definitely old timey, but massive. So it's different mm-hmm. than Wrigley or Fenway.
Okay, follow-ups. Was Luis at least high-fiving with his healthy, I believe, right arm and not the left?
So we were closest that it was left and left. So that's what we went with. But I did see him take BP yesterday. So he was hitting with both hands, it appeared, on the bat. And then he was fielding some balls in the outfield and looked pretty good. So hopefully we will see him soon. But yeah, we'll see.
Okay. I think I saw at least one of your vantage points being perhaps even in or near those scout seats. So you've been high-hatting it here in Oakland and getting a pretty good vantage point. You're not like just stuck in the upper deck. You're getting around the park to sort of like to check out all different vistas as well.
Yeah. Yeah. Today I was in the field box, which is another unique aspect of the park. It's on just like it sounds on the field down the first baseline. So you get a unique vantage point, not only of the field, but also the bullpen for our team, because it's right along that line. So you watch, you know, all of our players go in and out, depending on who's warming up. You can see if it's been a longer inning, like I mentioned before, Dylan Cease was throwing pitches in between game one. You can see all of that. So it's also a good spot to get autographs. A lot of the players will stop. I saw Tim was signing a bunch today. Vaughn was, Aloy, Jose Abreu came over and signed a little bit after the national anthem for some fans. So, yeah, it's a great vantage point.
I mean, listen, I already made the claim. So, I mean, I guess I have said, but listen, ballpark tour in Seattle, fist bump, Jose Abreu, team takes off. I'm not saying Elizabeth Gonzalez should be at every game the rest of the season, but it might not hurt White Sox. Okay, come on now. Hi, Sox. we know you're listening. Okay, now, you know, beyond that, it seems like you've had more. I mean, obviously talking to Amelia today is huge as well, but just in terms of the fan experience, you've run into some player family members. And then, of course, you found yourself sort of in the middle of a nice little outreach that I think White Sox fans sort of participated in and really pushed in terms of getting a particularly struggling, I guess, at the moment, you know, family back to the ballpark to sort of get their mind off of some things that are going on. You want to catch us up with sort of your social media and your, you know, off field experiences, because you're really, really every game, you know, it's been, you know, more than one interaction you've had that's been like, you know, something you would have loved, you know, going in like, wow, if I could just get one of these, it'd be awesome. And now you're getting like handfuls.
Yeah. So this particular interaction was with the Urban family. They're from Georgetown, California. So I initially saw their sign talking about how they had evacuated and came to see the Sox on Thursday. So now I have a relationship with the family. Dallas is the mom, Josh is the dad, and then they have three children. I got to talking to them during the game. I saw their sign, I took a picture of it and just put it out on Twitter to try and maybe get them mentioned on the broadcast. I was told that happened. I obviously was at the game, so I couldn't listen. And then I kind of got the idea, just, you know, knowing how great our fan base is maybe we can get them to another game. So they're not able to go home yet, obviously, with everything that's transpiring with the fires. They actually only got that mandatory evacuation on Thursday, just a couple hours before they got to the game. So they had voluntarily evacuated. By the time they got to the area, it was like actual evacuations. And then by the time they got to the park, there were sheriffs like knocking on their door at home they could see through cameras or whatever. So fast forward to the powers at be of social media. Lots of people generously donated. So you can see on Twitter, I gave everyone a shout out that donated. So appreciate that. thinking that we were just going to buy them tickets, you know, through White right. Sox Twitter. I did DM a couple people that have clout with the White Sox, whether it be players or what have you. And lo and behold, White Sox Dave responded. So thank you, Dave. And he reached out to Danny Mendek, who was nice enough to get the family tickets. So in addition to getting to go to the game today, they also got a nice donation because everyone still agreed to just give the money to the family. So they got to sit in that family section today. Went and checked in with them, and they were actually sitting behind a wife of someone on staff. And so they actually have tickets for tomorrow too. So yeah, it's just the nice deed that keeps on going. And I think maybe they're giving the White Sox a little bit of luck too. So we'll take that. And hopefully the luck goes both ways. Cause as of right now, their house is still standing. So
yeah.
Some people have lost their homes, but they have not yet. So.
Yeah, that's really what this is about. They hopefully their home will be safe. And now apparently you're going to be invited to Thanksgiving at the Vaughn's next year or something. What's going on with that?
No, I did get to chat with his mom and dad on Thursday. She was so cute and wearing his jersey, of course. And I have that picture that his baby picture that we had up at the stadium. Spitting image of still Andrew Vaughn today. And so I jokingly went up to her and asked if that was her baby, knowing full well that it was because I saw her talking to him. So, apparently Andrew wanted to be a bull rider when he was little. So that was the story behind that picture. So, lucky for us, he became a baseball player, and he's doing really well and leading the team in RBIs. So. We'll take it.
Yeah, I didn't know he was going to be an outfielder, but you know, okay, listen, you just take what you get, and he'd rather be playing outfield than not playing at all or playing in Charlotte. So yes, of course. Yeah. And so the one thing you did point out in our last podcast, you know, talking about the Seattle experience was really one of the key things for you, maybe less so, you know, amenities or food or fireworks or whatnot, but really the fan experience and, you know, more so, engaging with other fans, be they, you know, fans of the other team, or maybe White Sox fans who are traveling to see the team. And that seems to have been a big plus at both places. And certainly here with Oakland, the overall assessment though, with Oakland fans is passion and folks that you've seen, maybe on the White Sox side, you know, it's been just as fulfilling as some of the people we ran into in Seattle.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, you're not going to get any bells and whistles in Oakland. Yeah, I mean, I think everyone understands that coming here. But there's still a nostalgic about it. The people are great. I will say, if I had to do like a subcategory, Oakland A's fans have some of the coolest gear I've ever seen. A lot of it is throwbacks, just cool, like swaggy stuff that I feel like people on the South Side would appreciate. So if I was going to give them a subcategory, which is not something I usually rank on, their gear is pretty cool. So I like to see all the different styles and how people put it together to come to the park. But yeah, same great interactions. The people here are great. They know baseball. And they're humble too, especially last night. We came back and won, and I was sitting in front of a guy that used to work at the stadium. And so everyone was coming up and saying hi to him. Mm-hmm. And, they were gracious, and they're like, you know, we're not going for anything. It's cool. They didn't really care because we were all going nuts. So, it's been great.
What's got to help too for White Sox fans, you know, travel, whether, you know, maybe, you know, you live in Oakland or you're living in San Diego or whatever. So you just want to see your team, right? And they come to town. Mm-hmm. Oh my God, I got to see the team. Or, you know, if you're making a more devoted move like you are, Elizabeth, the fact that the team hasn't been, I mean, first of all, we're White Sox fans. I don't think we get too stuffy. I mean, yeah, I'd love to be in the position to be stuck. I'd love to be a Yankees fan and be able to look down my nose like that. But okay, you know, that's just never going to happen with the White Sox fans. But the fact that even the season's been such a struggle, I can't imagine there would ever be an issue where, geez, you know, a patch of fans are going to be like obnoxious or mouthy. Cause it's like, you know, we got nothing to be mouthy about at this point. So I could see how fans would be like, oh, you know, yeah, it's okay. But, you know, also you're not like, you're not running anybody down because it's like, we're just sort of happy we're getting close to first place. You know, I mean, we can't exactly get too stuffy about it.
Yeah. It was a little chippy in Cleveland, understandably so, but not here at all.
Oh, Cleveland. Yeah, really. You got that tough one out of the way. First of all, you had to go to Cleveland. Oh, God help you. You had to go to Cleveland. And then, yeah, really. I mean, legit rivalry, neck and neck with the team at a time where, you know, listen, fortunes have turned. I mean, you know, at that time, you know, you're happy to be there, but it's like, oh, God, am I going to, you know, is there going to be a tombstone at the end of one of these games? Because, you know, at some point, man, there has been some ugly scuffling in, you know, the Cairo Magic or whatever. But, so, okay, let's just look ahead briefly. Now, is there any, I mean, we've got a month left. Is there any road tripping still in store for you? Is this sort of closing the book on your world tour of baseball parks for the year?
No, not even close. Okay. Comerica Park this coming weekend.
All right.
And then I get to welcome the White Sox to Minnesota. So I will be recapping. I've been there before, but I'll be recapping everything for Target Field. And then at the end of the month, I will go to Petco for the first time.
Oh, so nice.
Down in
nice.
San Diego. And there's going to be a big, big group. There's already a lot of people going and a lot of LA area people heading down as well. So that should be a big turnout for the White Sox. It'll be good.
Our spirit captain, Ashley Sanders, just moved out there. She's going to be there, I believe, for the whole series. So that's going to be a must meet for you, Elizabeth, because between the two of you, the energy will be off the charts. Comerica, nice park. I would say probably, I think I would say I like it better than Cleveland, which, you know, to you, that might be, wow, that's some faint praise, but it's a pretty solid park. I think you'll enjoy that one. But and Petco, close to the top for me. Real, you know, I love those. And as we've already discussed, I love those intimate parks. The ones that seem even a little bit too small seem they got quirks. You know, every park, even the White Sox decide to build in some quirks when they they didn't do it to begin with. But you know, they took the weird UFO dome off the top, and you know, and then they actually, you know, gave it a little bit of flair, even though it was one of the last sort of cookie cutterish parks built. All right. Well, so essentially the answer is, Brett, be quiet. Quit suggesting I'm not going to every park, because I'm basically going everywhere the White Sox are going for the rest of the year. All right.
You're not alone.
I've written it down.
The amount of suggestions and begs and pleading I've gotten from Twitter. it's been fun, but no, it has nothing to do with me. It's all them.
but you have caught them at really the perfect time. I mean, not that you're going to feel bad about getting to see ballparks for the first time or getting to do this fun experiment and adventure. You know, no matter what, you could be right now rooting for the Oakland A's, a team that's, you know, really, really down, and still enjoy the experience of seeing all these parks. But boy, the fact that it's coinciding with the White Sox playing their best baseball of the year and actually feeling like there's some hope and optimism for the rest of the season, there being actually legitimate October baseball beyond the Minnesota series, you know, it's got to just, that's a cherry on top. Yeah. Okay. Well, we are going to have ballpark reviews. We're going to have probably going to be doing some podcast. Let's face it. It might be a bigger group in San Diego, but I mean, we'll be doing some podcasting, hopefully on the road with you, as this month goes on, Elizabeth. But thanks for checking in again, giving us a little mini review, giving all this cool inside information, including, you know, sort of interacting with, you know, be it fans or, you know, ball, or, you know, whoever you're high-fiving, you know, or, you know, fist bumping, ballpark tours, et cetera. No, it's been great. It's this fun little insight. And, you know, even for people who have, you know, been to the parks or maybe, you know, went, you know, years ago, it's fun to get a little fresh insight, you know, including myself, because I've been to all these you've been to, but, you know, didn't necessarily have these experiences either. Certainly did not start fundraising or reaching out to players. Or, you know, that's a pretty cool adventure. I mean, that's certainly a whole like sidebar to what would normally be just a, you know, a normal, fun, entertaining ballpark diary. But you got this whole sidebar where it's like, yeah, I'm talking to this person, baby pictures, yeah, fundraising. It's pretty awesome. So well done. You represent us very well. And it's great that you're sharing some of this with us. Thanks a lot.
Yeah, absolutely. Go Sox.
All right. We're going to do this again, you know, at some point, you know, at some point we're going to do a post-game podcast without Elizabeth as a centerpiece, but I don't know when it's going to be. I mean, you know, don't press me here. These have been great. But we will do more. And of course we will have a Southside Sox podcast proper at the end of the, road trip. Elizabeth, I don't know. She might be like traveling or something, finally getting, back home at that time, but, we'll be doing that for you real soon. So we'll be having a lot of podcast activity, including all the coverage you're used to getting. So, you know, again, without you out there reading, writing, and, listening, we're not here. So thanks for listening. Elizabeth, thanks for taking a little bit of time out during the road trip. Let's finish this up right on Sunday with a win. Come back with some, get back to Minnesota with some White Sox pride. And would it be a 6-1 road trip? Is that what we're angling for? I think it is, right?
Mm-hmm.
6 out of 7. So let's do it. Let's get it done. You know, you've done a great job so far. There's no loss here, but let's do it the right way. Make it 6 out of 7 for sure. Thanks for joining us, Elizabeth. And hey, we'll be doing one of these again real soon.
Sounds good.